The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
All right, it's time for hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. If you have a question that you would like to raise, this is the place to do it. You can set the direction, go wherever you want to go. Even if you have martial arts questions, we can probably answer those. Well, I say we. I could make a guess. Pastor Mark Femmel is with us from Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Are you like a black belt or something?
I'm something like that.
Something like that? That would be the... Is that the Christian martial arts answer? You're a humble black belt? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you don't advertise all of your moves because then, you know...
You don't have to have any moves, Pastor. I wouldn't take you on it for all the tea in China. I can see that I would lose that battle whether you had martial arts or not.
Well, do you drink tea?
Yeah. I drink too much of it. Here it is. Dun, da, 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 just finished.
I don't think Snapple's a Chinese tea, though.
I don't know.
I was just
Does
wondering how meaningful.
Chinese?
I was just wondering if that was a meaningful
it's
reference.
It's tea. You know, isn't that enough? So you got any plans for Ash Wednesday at Zion, Maryland Heights?
We actually do. Unfortunately, I can't tell you about any of them. We've got this awesome series. It's, if you've got a church home, go to your church home for Ash Wednesday. But if you don't, you got to stop by us. We're doing a Lenten series that... is quite shocking.
But shocking?
Shocking.
It is, I don't usually hear the word shocking associated with Ash Wednesday.
Well, it should. I mean, it's the day of repentance. It's the day where you get ashes smeared all
depressing.
Over your head.
Depressing. Yeah. I've heard that word associated with...
Sometimes to get a really good lesson through, you got to do it in a very surprising, very unconventional way.
So you're not going to tip your hand here?
I can't. I've kept this secret for 7 months.
Really?
Yes.
You almost could have had a baby in that amount of time.
I could have. Almost.
So, for those people who are... I don't know if I want to be shocked on Ash Wednesday, Pastor. Quite honest, it's all going to fall within the proper parameters and proprieties, is it?
Of course.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to show up naked or something.
Well, okay. Well, that leads me to my first question. The shocking, that is shocking. Mega church pastor Ed Young hit the pulpit a couple of weekends ago, and he shocked his congregation because he arrived in a Ferrari. You probably can't drive a Ferrari into your church over there, Pastor, but this is one of these mega church kind of things where, you know, you can get a Ferrari in there. After causing a stir on Twitter for tweeting, "Someone just gave me a brand new Ferrari," the Fellowship Church pastor, that's the name of the church, Fellowship Church, literally drove one onto the church stage on this particular Sunday. But that wasn't his car, according to his blog. A call to the church was not immediately returned. He was using it as part of a sermon illustration for his latest series titled RPM. Get it? Ferrari? Mm-hmm, RPM? Mm-hmm. Get it? Yeah, got that? Okay.
Yep.
Relationships, passion, marriage. God gave me a Ferrari because I am a Ferrari. You're a Ferrari too. God has given you a Ferrari, he said. Weeks earlier, he was behind the wheel of a Rolls Royce, which also was used as a prop, as he emerged on stage for his sermon. The luxury car, considered a dream car among many, was also used as a way of telling the congregation that they are Rolls Royces, because they are made in the image of God. So... It all sounds kind of shocking to me, Pastor. What do you think of Pastor Ed Young's technique?
Without hearing the sermon itself and the message attached to it itself, I can't make a call on it either way. I will say whatever the message was, they probably got a lot more people logging onto their website to hear the message. They probably had the people that were there that day are certainly not going to forget the thrust, and every pastor hopes that their illustrations are so powerful that the connection to Jesus is so powerful that people then therefore can't leave it behind. It sticks with them. Now, if it was something like you're a Rolls Royce because you're made in the image of God. So be the Rolls that you are. That you don't need Jesus for that. Instead, you know, it'd be a different thing if he had a Rolls Royce there and took a baseball bat, and the whole, you know, for the first half of the sermon was swinging it around, not actually hitting it, but like he's warming up and saying, every time we sin, it's almost as if somebody takes a baseball bat to the windshield. Every time we sin, it's like almost like somebody takes a baseball bat to the headlights. Every time we sin, it's like somebody banging on the fender, and it almost hit it, almost destroy this awesome car, and say, but you know what? You don't do that to a Rolls. But we do that to ourselves. If we won't do it to a Rolls Royce, how could we do it to something more precious than a Rolls Royce, the image of God? Because we do that, Jesus comes down like no mechanic. Jesus comes and he pushes the dents out. Jesus comes and he fixes the glass. He doesn't replace it. He fixes the glass. Jesus comes and he restores the headlights. He rebuilds us. We are precious because Jesus is precious and he works on us. We are precious because Jesus makes us precious. If that were the sermon, I would say, wow. Well done, good and faithful servant.
Even if you drove in the Ferrari or the Rolls Royce?
As long as it points people to Jesus.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. And now, since you have told us that you're having this shocking series there at Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights, I'm more interested than ever. Did you go to St. Louis here, Concordia St. Louis?
I did.
Right down the road here. So when you drive onto campus, it's kind of nostalgic for you, probably, in a small way.
Well, I'm doing a PhD again, so.
What do they call the classes when they teach you how to preach?
Homiletics.
Homiletics.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they just call it Preaching 101? Have you ever asked yourself that question? Yeah, I'm taking Preaching 101. That seems like that would be easier, but okay, homiletics. When they're teaching you homiletics, do they say, every once in a while, bring an item that you can hold up in the pulpit, something that you can show the congregation to use as an illustration, something that they can look at, something that you can see? Or do they say, never ever do that? That's not appropriate to bring, what do they call it?
Object lesson.
Object lesson.
Yeah.
We don't do that in when we're doing homiletics. No. Do they comment one way or the other on that when they were teaching?
As best as I can recall, no professor said never use an object lesson. There are some professors who always use an object lesson. They never say you must always, but by example, they always do.
When you say there are some professors that say, do you mean when they're teaching you in the class or when you are preaching in the pulpit? Always use an object lesson?
Well, no, nobody says always.
Nobody says always.
And nobody says never.
Okay.
But by example, some professors use object lessons more than others. Like Glenn Nielsen. Now, it's been a while since I've seen him preach in chapel, but it's also been a while since I've had him in class. But he is very good at using object lessons. Every time he preached...
Can you give me an example? Do you remember?
Sure.
Maybe what example he used?
He had an object lesson in which he actually had a building made out of Legos, and he was talking about, you know, this foundation, and, you know, it didn't look all beautiful, it didn't look all pretty and whatnot. You know, it was just kind of Legos, you know. It wasn't all this uniform color like one of the sets. And, you know, he said, it just kind of looks ugly, doesn't it? You think that someone would build it better. And his illustration was that as Jesus builds the church, though it may look ugly to us, you know, this guy's got this gift, this person doesn't do this, this person's got that problem, this person doesn't help out. It looks ugly. But being that it's built on the immaculate, the beautiful, the perfect foundation, that makes it beautiful, and that makes it useful. And he said sometimes people will build off in other directions, and this is kind of a tangent on the sermon, but he had where like there was this overextension, you know, like a Lego bridge that went off to nowhere. And, you know, if you're leaving, walking away from the foundation, you know, it falls apart. If I can share another one.
Sure.
He had a box. It was like one of these light boxes with a mirror in the front.
Yeah.
And you're looking at this, and, you know, he says, you know, this is when we come to church, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to look here. And, of course, we're seeing ourselves with our problems and our issues. And as he's describing this, all the things that we could see in a mirror, and he's just an illustration of one of the texts about, you know, the law is a mirror. It's a reflection of us. But then he said, But this is not all God wants you to see. And he flips a switch, and you see a light in the back, and you see a picture of Jesus. What's awesome about that is I remember those two sermons. One other sermon that I remember from chapel is Dean Rockman. He preached about he had ivy up there, you know, and you know, just regular ivy, and he talked about how ivy
grows.
Cub fan
or something? What's
Well, okay. What he was doing is he was saying, how do you know that you're being pruned off, and how do you know you're being cut off? And he says, you know, it depends. Does it hurt or does it help you? You know, whether you're being pruned off, pruned and made better, or if God's cutting is cutting you off because you've cut yourself off. But see, those are three sermon illustrations that I can remember right off the bat. And I heard hundreds of sermons in chapel.
Well, we know in the art of communication, which is really an art, it's not a science, we know that if the conversation that we have triggers the listener to begin painting imagery in his or her imagination about what he is or she is hearing, that it's more likely to stick. It's more likely to leave an impression. And if the conversation is very unimaginative, it's probably not going to stick. Which is why I ask you if you could give me an example of an object lesson. So, how come I never see any of those, it seems to me? I think I can count on my two hands the number of times I've seen a pastor use an object in the pulpit. Maybe I'm just going to the wrong place, I don't know, but it doesn't happen very often. Sounds like a great idea.
As a plug, our Lenten series, there will be an unforgettable image lesson.
Really?
It'll either haunt you or delight you the rest of your life.
That's quite a build up, Pastor.
It is. I am confident we can deliver. But the reason why image lessons are often pretty rare is that it is very difficult to come up with a fresh object lesson every Sunday. So like the light box. You put a lot of money into building this light box, you gotta get the electrical system, you got a light bulb, you got to get the power source, you got to get the wiring, you got to get the picture of Jesus, the mirror, the box, and you can't use this, you know, once a year because people are going to remember it once they see it.
Kill yourself with the electricity, too. That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? All right, so.
As a note, this is why so many children's messages in so many churches have
objects,
because kids remember, and also because parents remember.
And maybe that's why it's often heard, not always, but often, when the adults say, you know what, I got more out of the children's message than I did out of the sermon. You know, people say that sometimes, Pastor. Did you know that?
I do.
Is it because of the object?
Well, it's that, and it's also about a minute and a half long.
Yeah, I can definitely hang in there for 90 seconds. All right. If I were to say, I'm not saying anybody says this, and I'm not saying that anybody at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis or Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne has ever said this. Okay, everybody, you got that? But if I were to say, I disagree. I think that when you bring an object into the pulpit, that what you've done is use a distraction. And a distraction just simply has no place in the hallowed ground of the homily. So, no, don't do it, ever. What would you say?
I would say no one has ever come up to me and said, you remember that time where you told us some of the background of Abraham, you know, and the, you know, about the land of Ur and the Chaldeans? They never did that. However, there was this one sermon that I did before I was a pastor, and it's where I had, and Glenn Nielsen was the professor, and I had a box of Lucky Charms and I had a box of Total. And this is like my second or third sermon ever. Yeah. And so I said, you know, I didn't have Total on the table yet, so I shouldn't have told your listeners. But so I had a box of Lucky Charms, and I said, Lucky Charms, they're just great, aren't they?
Yeah,
I mean, cereal, you get marshmallows, you throw some milk in there, it's healthy.
What a concept.
Part of your daily balanced breakfast, right? And I started looking at all these cool things in those Lucky Charms, and I said, isn't this fun? I mean, it's like, I don't remember now, like green clovers and purple horseshoes and red balloons. They have red balloons now. And I started talking about how the original marshmallows and all the ones they have now, and these rainbows, these multicolored marshmallows. And as I turned the box and I said, now look, there's another label. I started reading this, and it was something like, you know, if you have a regular bowl of cereal, it's like 400% of your daily amount of sugar, you know, half a gram of protein if you eat the whole box. I mean, there's all this stuff. No calcium, no zinc. And I don't remember all the details. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm reading all this stuff, and I said, wow.
Not all that terribly nutritious.
Yeah. And I said, wow, this is if you're looking for healthy food, this isn't going to last you very long. If you're looking for energy to carry you through the day, this isn't going to last you very long. Said, Lucky Charms don't work, do they? You know, sometimes we treat God like Lucky Charms. You know, we want what we want, and when he's good to us, when he delights our taste buds or whatever our gut feelings are, then we're in. But I don't know, do you really want a God that does that kind of stuff, that just gives you whatever you want to, and it blows up in your face? Well, maybe we'll try something else. And then I pulled out a box of Total, and I said, here's an option. I said, no marshmallows, no sugar, doesn't even float when you put milk in it. And I said, no taste. And I started looking at the ingredients, and I said, wow, but look at the difference. And I said, we could treat God like a lucky charm to get us out of trouble when we really need it. Or we could trust him for totally of everything, or total. So, you know, I had this wordplay. People who go to that congregation, every so often when I bump into them, they still remember that sermon 8 years ago, Chuck.
Now, you made a pretty strong case for the object lesson. And there are probably some pastors listening to us right now thinking, yeah, that's a good idea. I haven't done that for a while. Maybe I'll try to do that. Where is the line? Because it seems to me that if you're driving Rolls Royces into the building, if you're driving Ferraris into the building, in order to somehow press the point that RPM is relationships, passion, and marriage, you may have crossed a line from object lesson into gimmickry.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to extend that too far and turn it into a gimmick?
I certainly think so. But the same kind of person who has such a lack of theological bearing that their sermon is just an opportunity for them to show off their gimmickiness, whether they got a roll sitting on the stage or they're going to juggle some hacky sacks, it depends on the individual who's doing it. You know, so a kind of person who's going to drive a Rolls Royce in just for the sake of driving a Rolls Royce in, and hey, look at me, I got a Rolls Royce on my stage. He's, if that's the reason why he's doing it, he doesn't got anything else. He's going to be gimmicky or cheap or flippant no matter what he does.
The story here seems to suggest that, and I underline suggest, that the pastor, by tweeting, someone just gave me a brand new Ferrari, was pulling the chain there a little bit of those who might be attending the church that weekend. Because no, not actually. It was a loner for an object lesson. But you know what? If I got a tweet that my pastor just got in a Ferrari, you know what the rest, you know what we lay people will do? The pastor can't afford a Ferrari. The pastor's got no business driving around in a Ferrari. It sends the wrong message, you know. Maybe the pastor was pulling that chain a little bit there, setting up some anticipation, creating some buzz. Then he drives it onto the stage and then goes on to explain, no, it's not my car, but it's an object lesson. Is that appropriate, Pastor?
You know, the question is he being innocent as a dove while being shrewd as a serpent? Because that's shrewd. You know, this is Jesus says, be innocent as a dove and shrewd as a serpent.
And
but he actually puts it in the other order. Be shrewd as serpents.
Yeah.
And innocent as doves.
Pretty shrewd thing here, I'd say, wouldn't you?
It is. The question is it wise? Or is it innocent? You know, I don't know. You know, it's he's using it as an opportunity to bring people in. You know, somebody would say, oh, there's a Ferrari. I'm going to see it on Sunday. I got to see this. But it all depends on what the actual sermon was. If the sermon was, hey, look, I got a Rolls, or hey, look, I got a Ferrari. Now, Ferraris have an RPM gauge on there, which reminds me, marriage is about relation and passion in marriage, you know. And then he goes on to something else. You know, then people are going to be distracted. They're going to say, when is he going to come back to the Ferrari? But if he constantly shows up saying, you know, like Chuck, you're a Saturn view, and Mark, you're kind of like a scooter going around Taiwan, you know. But Jesus is the Ferrari that teaches us how to be a Ferrari and makes us little Ferraris. If that's the point of the message, that Jesus, the perfectly put together, the perfectly run relationship and passion machine, makes us into Ferraris, then the whole sermon is, do you want to be a Ferrari that Jesus can make you into? Or do you want to be the little scooter that goes around up to 35 miles an hour? And then it's well done. And then it's faithful. But if it's something like, hey, look at me, I have the connections to pull off a Ferrari, don't you? Aren't I great?
So you had an opportunity to participate in chapel services here at Concordia Seminary when you were a student, where there are professors, highly trained theologians, people who understand the business of preaching, homiletics, at a high level, and can be exemplary. But you know what? Some of us can punt and some of us can't. These guys who make $1 million a year punting the football in the NFL, you know, they can do that because God gave them that gift. What about object lessons, Pastor? Have you seen somebody go into the pulpit? Well, maybe not guilty of gimmickry, but boy, they've got a really, really cool object lesson, and then they go up and it just doesn't make any sense, and it's like, what were you thinking? Does it take a kind of a gift, a talent, to go into object lesson territory?
Yeah, some people do it much better than others, and people who don't do it very well generally shy away from it. People who do it well generally lean towards using object lessons. But yeah, you've got to be very intentional that the object points to Jesus as opposed to, hey, look at how creative I was. I got a dirty shoe into the sermon. Hey, look at that, you know.
All right. Up in Fargo, North Dakota, news today from the Associated Press, it says the mother of a North Dakota soldier who was killed 5 years ago in Iraq says she understands a court ruling protecting the protesters at her son's funeral. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled last week that the Westboro Baptist Church of Topeka, Kansas, which holds anti-gay protests at the funerals of soldiers, is protected by the First Amendment. Lottie Hermanson, the mother of National Guard Specialist Michael Hermanson, told the Forum newspaper in Fargo that she knows the Constitution protects free speech, but she does not like Westboro's tactics. Hermanson said she's thankful to the North Dakota Patriot Guard Riders, one of many groups across the country that shields families from protesters, for serving at her son's funeral. 5 years later, the emotions are still there. No surprise there, Pastor Femmel. Were you aware of the decision when it came down last week? Did you hear about it in the news?
Yes, I did.
8-1 in favor of the Westboro Baptist Church. Was that on your radar screen? Is that something that you were curious, awaiting the decision? And when you heard it, what did you think?
I wasn't particularly awaiting the decision because you kind of know where that kind of stuff is going. I'm actually very thankful that the decision went the way that it did. I mean, I suppose we can talk about that more at the end of the break or after the break. But yeah, this. It stinks that the Westboros are taking advantage of it in a very evil way.
It stinks? It stinks civilly or religiously?
It stinks as far as what the world has to put up with, but even more so, it stinks that the Westboro Baptists got this ruling because it is actually to their detriment.
Well, I'll ask you to explain that on the other side of the break, and I also would like you to address this question. Because we talked about this last week on our Ask the Pastor program after the decision was handed down, but I ran out of time. I did not get a chance to answer this question. But if you're a pastor and you have been feeling just a little hot, you know, the collar is a little tight here because you can see a day coming where you might be handcuffed and taken off to jail for preaching that homosexual behavior is wrong, do you feel like you just got some breathing room? Thanks to the Westboro Baptists. We'll be right back.
Servanthood is a core value of Concordia Seminary. To be a servant is alien to so many people in our society. Even some clergy take on authoritarian airs. But Jesus, Son of God and Lord of all, came as a servant. We want Concordia graduates to model servanthood to their congregations and to their communities. Servanthood, that's the Christian way.
It has reached countless souls with its meaningful message. Now you can hear it in concert. The Bach Society of St. Louis presents the Lenten and Easter portions of Handel's Messiah, Sunday, March 13th at 7 p.m. in the beautiful St. Francis Xavier College Church, Grand and Lindell in St. Louis. A magnificent experience. Call 652-BACH or visit BachSociety.org. That's 314-652-BACH.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The London, Ontario Hospital is trying to kill little baby Joseph, who suffers from a severe neurological disorder. Doctors say he's in a persistent vegetative state. First, humans aren't vegetables. Second, family says Joseph responds to sound and touch, especially cold hands. The hospital is trying to force the parents to allow them to end treatment and kill him. Parents want doctors to give Joseph a tracheotomy and allow them to take him home so they can care for him until he dies. But the hospital won't do it because it's too risky. They want to kill the child, but this simple procedure is too risky. Parents aren't allowed to visit without a security guard present. If they video Joseph, they'll deny visits entirely. They don't want the truth getting out like it did with Terry Schiavo.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Morning, their slain pastor. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. More than 200 people have packed a Texas church to mourn their young pastor who was killed during an apparent robbery in which his assistant was severely beaten. Many cried and hugged each other as they walked into Arlington's North Point Baptist Church Sunday, 3 days after the Reverend Clint Dobson was killed. The 28-year-old Dobson, a distant relative of evangelical leader Dr. James Dobson, was pastor for about 3 years at North Point, a satellite church of First Baptist Church of Arlington. At the service covered by KCBI Radio, First Baptist Pastor Dennis Wiles told the congregation,
"I'll be able to stand on Wednesday morning at Clint's funeral, and I can declare to you absolutely with confidence that Clint Dobson has claimed his place in the company of the redeemed."
A 24-year-old suspect has been arrested and charged with capital murder. I'm Steve Coleman.
I'm Diane Summers, host of The Essence, each weekday between 1 and 3 here on KFUO Radio. Sacred and classical music reflecting the beauty of creation and the great heritage of the church throughout the ages. Join me weekdays as we explore and experience the great inspiration provided by some great classics. Music for your daily walk.
The Essence with Diane Summers is underwritten on KFUO Radio by Lutheran Senior Services, older adults living life to the fullest.
Is your church, school, or organization having an event that you want to advertise on KFUO? It's very simple. Just send an email to dsummers@kfuo.org with all the important information about the event. Include the date, time, and location. We'll add the event to our datebook. Events are mentioned at the top of each hour with the weather broadcast. Send us your information today.
You're listening to the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Pastor Mark Femmel is with us here today. He of the shocking Ash Wednesday service coming up this Ash Wednesday. Did we give a service time for...
2 o'clock and 7 o'clock.
2 o'clock in the afternoon and 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And the address for Zion, Maryland Heights?
It's 12075 Dorset Road, 63043.
Pretty easy to find?
Yeah, you go to Highway 270, really close to Highway 70, and you get off of the Dorset exit, and we are one-third of a mile inside 270. Big old bright, colorful playground, big red brick church.
Mm-hmm. All right, before we got to the bottom of the hour, we brought up this business of these funeral protests, the Westboro Baptist Church, victorious in their suit in the Supreme Court last week, almost unanimous response from the justices. The vote was 8-1 in favor of the Westboro Baptist Church and against the man who had brought suit against them because they did what they did at the funeral of his, I believe, his deceased Marine son. And so there's fallout now coming from that decision, and the story in AP today is about a mother of a North Dakota soldier, and she seems to be saying that her heart's not with the decision, but she understands it. Her head is with the decision. She believes that free speech is that important. And so she has been quoted here in the Associated Press as saying that she understands that. Now, as we were talking about this, you had an interesting angle. Can you speak to that right before we went to the break?
Sure. Well, there's two sides to this. First off, the church wins and Westboro Baptist loses.
The church wins. Apparently you missed what I said there.
Yeah,
8-1.
I know. But the church wins and Westboro Baptist Church loses. And this is why. If we start censoring what people can say in the name of religion, legally and civilly, then all of a sudden the government can rule what pastors are saying on Sunday morning. They can rule what verses you read in the Bible, what verses you share, what Bible studies you can do, what topics you can discuss. They rule everything because they're now dipping into the religious realm.
Actually got a little of that in Canada right now.
I was just going to say, and if we do anything, we should learn this. We should learn the story from Canada. Do not go where they are going. This is where it leads to. And see, if you don't believe me, look at what happened to marriage. Once the church said, we'll allow the state to govern what we call marriage, all of a sudden, they're defining it as any two people. And pretty soon, it'll be a person and whatever else. So if you want to marry a dog, we'll go ahead. Maybe they'll start selling dog-sized wedding rings. Who knows?
I'd like to say that's crazy, but I used to say the stuff that's happening now is crazy. So I guess,
yeah,
I get your point.
Well, it only gets worse. It only gets worse. So if the government starts regulating what can and cannot be said as far as religion, then bad things happen. But see, here's the other thing. No one is going to start following the hate mongers and people who teach this kind of stuff, which means in the capitalism of ideas, in the competition of religions, the more and more people understand what Christians are actually doing, the more and more the church wins. And so what this does is it not only highlights Westboro Baptist Church, but it highlights the number of Christian organizations that are getting involved in blocking out the sounds and the chants and the jeers of Westboro Baptist Church. You know, the people that surround the funerals,
right,
and drown out the noise with good stuff. So the church wins. Good ministries get highlighted. People have a reason to march. The Westboro Baptist Church loses, and this is why. Sin is sin, and evil is evil. Westboro Baptists need someone to stop them from their sins because the government has failed to find another way to stop them. They are going to continue to do this, and they're going to continue to do what is abominable in the sight of God. People who know Fred Phelps should talk to him and remind him why this is bad. People who know the people who go to Fred Phelps Church should talk to them and remind them why this is bad. Will they listen? No. But that is not the prerogative of the people of God to determine who they share the Word of God with and not. So does it change Fred Phelps? Probably not. But you know, what if it does? We'll have the greatest conversion story since the days of St. Paul.
If I were to make the argument that in permitting the Westboro Baptist Church to carry on in such a provocative, maybe even, dare we say it, hateful way, that has motivated, as Lottie Hermanson, the mother that we're talking about here in this AP story, to offer praise for this group called the North Dakota Patriot Guard Riders. I don't know who the North Dakota Patriot Guard Riders are, but I do know that it's not unusual if there's a military funeral and the word is out that the Westboro Baptist Church is expected to show up for hundreds of motorcyclists to ride into town and form kind of a protective ring around the funeral so that the Westboro Baptist can't get to it. Now, that may sound courageous, it may sound patriotic, it may sound like a godly response. But you know, if somebody gets shot, Pastor, if somebody in the Westboro Baptist Church is as crazy as Jared Loughner, for example, the man who shot Gabrielle Giffords in the head, or if somebody in the motorcycle outfit just got a little less ethics than the rest of them, if somebody gets shot, then we're going to say, you see, you allowed this freedom, the freedom of the Westboro Baptists and the freedom of the North Dakota Patriot Guards, and now you got a dead person. And we can't have that. How would you respond to that?
Well, it wasn't religion that taught this. It's the lack of religion. People who are truly following Jesus don't recognize this as the face of their Lord. Now, if somebody goes off and gets shot, I mean, that's like saying, because cars are illegal, therefore it's the government's fault that we are allowed to have cars. Same thing as the sermon illustrations earlier on the other side of the break. The sermon illustration doesn't make or break a pastor. The presence of conflict doesn't make or prevent a death. What prevents a death is those who sow evil to stop sowing evil. So if somebody gets shot on the Westboro side or the other side, it is the Westboro's fault because they are stoking this fire of conflict, they're stoking this animosity, they're stoking this hatred, and they are attacking every single one of our soldiers and every one of American citizens' sense of morality.
If you had, this is a hypothetical, if you had an opportunity to stand with those who are keeping the Westboro Baptists away, is that something you'd like to do or want to do, or is that inappropriate for a pastor, or how do you see that?
I'd love the privilege. I just don't have a motorcycle.
Yeah, you could probably stand motorcyclists
there you go.
With those. What do you make of this mother? This is an interesting thing to try to sort out. She lost her son. We're not talking about, you know, whether or not the NFL is going to come back anytime soon and continue to generate their billions of dollars. We're talking about a mother who lost her son. And we're talking about a mother who felt the sting of the Westboro Baptist protests. And now she comes out and says she agrees with the Supreme Court. Are the rest of us in a position to evaluate that kind of a thing, Pastor, or is that just so personal and private that it's beyond our ability to really form a credible opinion?
How the mom could understand, how the mom can have that dichotomy?
Yeah, because I think most of us would expect, I think I would expect, that this woman would be first in line to condemn the decision by the Supreme Court.
My mind would be blown if I found out she was not a Christian. Because this kind of stuff happens throughout Christianity all the time, and almost exclusively. You look at what happened to that shooter with the Amish kids. You remember that a while ago?
Mm-hmm.
And the community came out and prayed for him. It's like, whoa. But you know, that's what fanatical followers of Jesus do. They always triumph.
And you think that's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And if she's not a Christian, you've got a blown mind, I guess.
My mind would be blown. I'd like to know where she got it from. Because I get that kind of stuff, but I just copy Jesus.
Let's turn our attention to a new book that has been released here in March. The title of the book is Can Christians Be Saved? Excuse me. It's written by Virginia T. Stevenson and Buck Rhodes. And apparently the theme of the book is a quote-unquote suggestion for a new reformation of Christianity. You ready? This is coming out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Let me read just a little bit of this. Aiming to be the groundbreaking and controversial religious book of the year, Can Christians Be Saved? A Mystical Path to Oneness by Stevenson and Rhodes presents a new perspective on traditional religious teachings, turning away from the dualism that creates separation, guilt, shame, and fear, and turning instead toward the principles of oneness or non-dualism. Now, so far, I'm clueless. Oneness, dualism, non-dualism, I don't know what this means. I would need to read on and hope that I'd get clued in. Has it spoken to you already, Pastor? Are these terms familiar to you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me what you understand this to be saying, at least so far.
At least so far, I would say this is more or less like reincarnated Buddhism, in which you cease to be you and I cease to be me. We're simply different parts of the same cosmic universal whole. And I suspect if they've got problems with traditional Christianity or traditional religions, they're going to separate, they're going to try to remove the differences between good and evil.
Let's read on. Using gestalt processes and initiations drawn from ancient sacred texts and non-dualistic worldview, the authors discover a path free of the doctrine and judgment that make up so much contemporary religious teaching. Readers are shown how to replace beliefs based on religious dogma with beliefs drawn from personal experience of sacred literature. Are you getting suspicious?
Well, you can't replace dogma except with more dogma. So whether it comes from a book that you didn't write or it comes from your own personal understandings of how the world works, it's different. Same teaching. Dogma means teaching.
Toby Johnson, author of 9 books on spirituality, says, quote, "The process offered and dramatized through the author's sharing of their own personal experiences is to approach religious imagery and myth as one would a dream, understanding and analyzing the symbols to discover greater meaning than just the quasi-historical story. In a lovely and gentle way, I thought this book explains what religion is and should and could be, and such a practice of higher consciousness religion really could save the world." Now, if you thought we were just dabbling around here, Pastor, and so much gobbledygook, no, we're talking about saving the world here.
Yeah, but see, even he says you can't do dualism. You can't say there's good and bad. There's no such thing as judgment and whatnot. But then he's telling me that I'm wrong and I'm bad and I'm incorrect and that he is correct.
He said that, Pastor.
He just did. He said, you know, can Christians be saved? And they can only be saved from their dualistic mindset, according to him, if we swear off what we believe and agree with him. So it means he's right, we're wrong. He's good, we're evil. He's being judgmental.
Author Virginia Stevenson says, "We set out with the hypothesis that the Bible was the secret hiding place of the teachings of the ancient mystery schools. Our work leads us to help the reader to discover the presence of God within." Rhodes, the other author, says that for them, Jesus has become the archetype of a successful candidate of an ancient mystery school. Knowing Jesus in this way provides an excellent guide in making the internal transition from the old dualistic worldview into a dogma-free way of being in the world. What do you think?
I would love to see.
I've been in search of an archetype, Pastor. I think I may have found one.
Yeah. I would love to see what he says is the actual Jesus, because the Jesus that I see in the Scriptures constantly is the one who says, "Come to me," as opposed to somewhere else. "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." He says that I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So I suppose if you throw out every single thing that Jesus actually said and every single thing all of his followers ever said and every prophecy about him being distinct and separate from all of us, then I guess you can kind of make a Jesus that you want of your own making. But see, even he says that his own personal experiences are better than some sacred text. He's making judgment calls all over the place when he's saying, let's not make judgments. Let's be unified.
Well, as you are no doubt aware, our culture and our society is moving in the direction away from the traditional and into the realm more and more of personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your religion is yours to create, to make a good one out of it. And the only thing that the folks that I'm describing here, stereotypically, I admit, the only thing that they almost all agree on is that Christianity, traditional Christianity, is bad because of, I guess, dualism, judgment and grace. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, that's kind of what this this new... It's not really new. I mean, it's been new age for, you know, decades, but it's kind of this new thing. But what's amazing is that among the most rapidly growing denominations are those which are most traditional. Because kids realize, our kids, middle schoolers and high schoolers, realize it doesn't really matter who you think the third president of the United States was. It is who it was. It doesn't matter if you think that you need potassium or not. Without it, you'll die. You know, and so they're realizing we can't determine our own reality. That's about the stupidest thing they've ever heard. So they actually say postmodernism is falling apart.
Who says that?
Church theologians and, you know, like political commentators. I don't have names. But talk to kids these days, you know, like middle schoolers and high schoolers, and ask them if you actually have the power to think it and make it happen. If you believe it, you can achieve it kind of crap.
So I'm not contradicting you.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some of that evidence myself. However, there is some polling that seems to indicate that traditional churches are, they're not at an end, but they are in diminished favor.
Mm-hmm.
And that particularly for, say, 18 to 34-year-olds, they don't want anything to do with it. And it may be that they are the target audience for this kind of rhetoric. Ancient mystery schools and stuff. You know, these people just got done playing Dungeons and Dragons. They know more about that than maybe they'll ever know about the Bible. And when I say Dungeons and Dragons, I really mean video games, things like that.
Sure.
They would appear to be candidates for this kind of approach. I think that's true. Do you disagree with that?
Well, and all the people that jump on this, they're historical reconstructionists, which means they say, well, you know, here's a theory. Blue elephants love to eat eucalyptus. Well, so, you know, nobody's ever seen a blue elephant eating eucalyptus. So they say, well, no, you see, they all died out because of the advancements of the koala bears. You know, and it's like, can you actually find a blue elephant? Can you find a reference to a blue elephant? Can you see any sort of, like, bones around anywhere there's eucalyptus trees of elephants? And, you know, you go through all the stuff and they say, oh, well, there's actually no basis for our history, but we're selling novels
but
like Dan Brown.
If a blue elephant religion sort of advances me in the direction that I want to go to do what I want to do and to get rid of you medieval types that tell me, no, there are boundaries that say I shouldn't go there, then I'm going with the blue elephant thing.
And you can worship whatever you want. You want to worship dirt, have fun with your dirt. But when you run into a Christian and you say your dirt can help you, I will say, show me how dirt helps you. And you'll say, well, show me how your God helps you. And I'll say, well, I've actually got a happier marriage because I copy Jesus. My kids love me because I copy Jesus. When we look at history, there's a guy who continued to raise the dead and heal the sick. His name is Jesus. What did your dirt do for you? And so if you want to worship dirt, here's an encouragement. Never talk to a Christian because you'll look embarrassed.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, James. You're on the Bible study.
Yes, Pastor. Without being a roundhead or a cavalier.
A what?
Or one who, a roundhead.
A roundhead.
Or a cavalier.
Is that good or bad?
It depends on what posture you take. But without being either a roundhead or a cavalier or one who's trying to put the best construction on a particular issue, is formalism or religious formalism good for the church today?
Define religious formalism for me.
I'm going to ask the pastor to kind of put those parameters on it, but I would think it would have a little something to do with the last article that you read, but...
Do you have a question, Pastor?
I think so.
All right, we'll talk about it.
Well, I would say that formalism, just like the Rolls Royce or the Ferrari driving up on the stage, if it serves a better purpose than, hey, I've got a Ferrari, then it's good. You know, if it's, hi, we're smoking incense today because, well, you know, Pastor didn't take a shower and he's kind of stinky, well, that's bad. If it's, we're going to chant the Old Testament lesson today because, you know, Pastor, he loves his Gregorian chants, it's not doing the purpose. However, if part of our formal traditions actually serve the greater purpose of showing you Jesus and showing you what you need, then there's no greater treasure. At our church, we don't chant a whole lot because a lot of times people are pushed off from chanting. However, we will never replace the confession and absolution because we need to come before God at the beginning of the service and put our sins out there. Recognize that when we come before God, we're beggars, and then hear his words to say, I don't care what your sins are, what the consequences of your sins are. I don't care why you do it. I forgive you. That's a formal rite that is precious. So does it have to be in the same formal words that confession and absolution have been in since, you know, the apostles? Absolutely not. But is it necessary to have something just as powerful? Yeah.
It seems that we have, the pendulum has been swinging for some time in the direction of breaking down boundaries everywhere. Boundaries on divorce, boundaries on human sexuality, boundaries on what constitutes civility, and all those things. And we seem to be reaping what we've sown here now. Did I understand you to suggest that young people coming up on the heels of this reaping, which is not all that pretty these days, are seeing a different deal? That the pendulum may be on the verge of reversing or already has?
A lot of people, they were ready to count the Eastern Orthodox Church out, like they were gonna die off, because after all, they pride themselves that they haven't changed anything since the days of the apostles. And what's amazing is they're actually growing quite quickly. And this is their advertisement. We are doing something bigger than us. We have the privilege to be pulled into something larger than us. And kids can't stop getting enough. And see, this is why all these denominations that are going liberal...
Apparently the media is not reporting this.
Well, why would they? But see, look at numbers. Talk to pastors and ask them the size of their congregations. Go to congregations and look at the number of people that are there and the age of the people that are there. You look at these denominations that are going very liberal with the Word of God, ELCA, Anglican, Episcopalian, Pentecostal, these non-denominational churches. You look at the churches that are becoming very liberal, and not every non-denominational church, but you look at these denominations that are becoming very liberal with the Word of God, and they are dying.
Is there a way for you at Zion Maryland Heights to capitalize on this unreported momentum?
Well, we are.
Or do you, you're just doing what you're doing, what you did last year and what you're going to be doing next year, whatever's going on around you, or are you in touch with this?
Well, see, what works is showing people how Jesus tangibly, specifically meets their needs. And so if someone's, just kind of feeling jaded by some sort of post-Buddhist enlightenment thing, they run into me and they say, wow, you got a lot of really good answers. And I just show them the source. I talk to them about Jesus. And there's actually been a couple of people that have walked up to me. I work out at a gym, and this is my primary networking and talk to people who don't go to my church field. And this is what I do. I talk to people about this stuff, and it's amazing. It's amazing because when you let people see Jesus, they want even more.
Yeah, that sounds kind of dangerous to me. That's a way to get hit by a 5-pound weight there, Pastor.
No, but this is good. See, if I get killed for Jesus' sake, I'm set.
That's a good way to look at it, I think. I'm probably have to ponder on that a little bit, but yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. All right, give us your Ash Wednesday service times one more time real quick here.
2 o'clock. 7 o'clock, if you come, you will never forget what you see.
Well, I tell you what, that's very inviting, very inviting.
It's better than a Ferrari.
Thank you, sir. It's Pastor Mark Femmel, pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Now, tomorrow we're going to start a brand new Bible study book. We're going into the Old Testament. Pastor Spomer says this is kind of tough territory. Ecclesiastes, the first 11 verses of chapter 1 with the Jolly One, Pastor Jolly John Lekomsky. Next time on the Bible study.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.